Warriors-Cavs Game 1 of the NBA Finals set for Thursday night here at Oracle Arena. I'm Lawrence Scott, and this Warrior Sound Finals preview starts with Coach Kerr addressing the media on this Wednesday afternoon after the team's practice at the arena.
The one thing I know about our team is even though they're going to make mistakes, they're competitive, and they're always going to find a way to bring things back and get things going. Experience has a lot to do with that. So our second half was obviously much better. Our guys came together. But yeah, it was a little chaotic during that huddle.
Steve Ron Project from the San Francisco Chronicle. You've probably been asked this in some form before, but what's your best theory on the third quarter? The numbers are just insane. How many more points you've scored and the shooting percentages, particularly for Steph. It's like in the playoffs, 25, 25, 60,
yeah.
25. What do you think's going on?
I think there's a few things. I think our guys in the regular season anyway, there's the first half, there's a lot of feeling out process of the game and figuring out what's what. A lot of games, you know, maybe you go in, you're not doing so well in the first half, or it's tied, or maybe we're behind and guys are upset, so their competitive desire kicks in. I also think teams tend to play really, really hard against us from the beginning. You know, we've been the hunted for the last few years, and I think teams are excited to play us. They come out on fire defensively, and it takes a lot out of them. And I think in the second half, they wear down. I thought that happened in Houston the other night. Their defensive intensity was incredible. They had a lot to do with all of our turnovers and mistakes, but that takes a lot out of you. And in the third quarter, teams tend to tire a little bit, and maybe that's why we make a push.
Tim, on the right side, third row.
Steve, Tim Reynolds with the Associated Press. The LeBron you're going to see now, how – as crazy as this might sound, have you noticed a continued evolution with him in these four finals that you've gotten ready to face him in? And also, how would you describe that evolution of him? I mean, how does the best player on the planet keep getting better even at this point?
It's remarkable. You know, you think back 5 years ago, when he was with Miami, they were playing the Spurs, the finals, and the Spurs were going underneath on every screen, just daring him to shoot. Contrast that to now, where he's shooting fadeaway threes from 30 feet to close games out. I think his confidence level in his shot is the biggest thing. But I think it is pretty remarkable when you got a guy who's already considered one of the top few players ever to play the game can make that much improvement late in his career. It's a testament to his work ethic and to his work on his skill set. The shooting is what has really gotten better in the last few years.
Mark in the second row.
Steve, Mark Schwartz, ESPN. I have two for you. First of all, people always talk about LeBron's basketball IQ as being at the top of the Mount Everest. You have a player on your team in Draymond Green whose basketball intellect is really high, too. Just how high is Draymond's IQ, and can you give us some great anecdotes about that demonstrate his basketball intellect?
Draymond's is more like Mount Fuji, I would say. I don't know. Just trying to give you something to work with. Draymond is an incredibly sharp basketball mind. He sees the game as it happens, before it happens even. He's kind of a move or two ahead of everybody on the defensive end. And it's amazing to have him out there to lead our defense, to get everybody organized, to save plays that are about to break down because he sees it happening before everyone else does. Probably the best defensive player I've ever seen. Scottie Pippen would be right there with him, but they're different in that Draymond has to guard fives. The league is different, you know. I don't know if Draymond could have guarded Shaq and Hakeem and those guys, but those guys don't exist anymore. So the way the game is played now, the ability to guard one through five, I don't think there's anybody who can compare to Draymond.
And secondly, the other day at shoot-around, Steph really reacted to this narrative that it's LeBron and 11 guys from SNL playing for the Cavaliers. First of all, how dangerous is such a narrative for your group, and what does it say about LeBron that everyone thinks he single-handedly brought this group across the finish line?
Yeah, well, Michael had the Jordan errors. It's anytime you have a team that's led by somebody who's considered the greatest player of all time or one of them, there's going to be an interesting sort of dynamic with the teammates, and we have great respect for the other guys. You know, Kevin Love is an all-star, perennial all-star, great three-point shooter, physical rebounder. Kyle Korver, one of the great shooters of all time. We've seen JR, I think last time he was in this building, he had like 30 points in game five last year. We know what these guys can do. You don't get to the finals with one man, no matter how good that one man is. So we have great respect for the Cavs, their resiliency, the fact that they're here 4 years in a row. We know exactly how hard that is. So we're preparing for a lot more than just LeBron, that's for sure.
Jeff on the right side.
Jeff Zilgit, USA Today. Steve, LeBron plays with four guys on the team who used to play against him deep into the playoffs. You were with Cleveland at one point in your career, played against Jordan deep in the playoffs, and then you joined his team. What's the difference playing against a guy like that and then playing alongside a guy like that?
It's a lot more fun, I can tell you that. You know, I just think that when you have a great player on your team, it's a lot easier. The game becomes easier. And, you know, with our team, you know, we're not a one-man show. We got a lot of guys who can take over games, but it has to fit. The pieces have to fit. And what I like about our team is our guys are very unselfish. They all fit together well. They play off of each other. And we found a nice groove.
Just briefly, Steve, when you played against it, was it a feeling of frustration?
Against Michael?
Yes.
Yeah, it was very frustrating. A lot more fun playing with him. I do remember, though, when the first time I guarded him when I was in Cleveland, he faked right, faked back left, and went right. And I stayed right in front of him, but only because I went for the first fake. And we came to the bench, and Lenny Wilkins said, "Guys, did you see what Steve just did? He stayed in front. That's what you have to do." I said, "That's right, guys. Come on." I was literally still going for the first fake, and he came right back to me. So that was my highlight.
Marla in the middle.
Marla Ridenour, Akron Beacon Journal. When Ty came back from his leave of absence, he said that you were really important in talking to him when he was out. And could you, I mean, I don't know if you want to share anything you said, but could you tell how hard it was for him to take that leave of absence?
We texted, called first and then texted, and we had a good text exchange. I just tried to share some of my experience when I was out last year. And the main message was, you can't allow what feels like the enormity of the job to interfere with your health and your recovery and whatever you need to do. You know, I just told him the team will still be there when you get back. But sometimes I think in this job, because there's so much passion from the fan bases and because everybody wants to win so badly, it feels bigger than it really is. So just kind of a reminder that we're just playing a sport, you know, get better and it'll, yeah, it was a good exchange. I'm a big fan of Ty's. I don't think he gets enough credit, frankly. But that's probably the burden of coaching LeBron. There's a lot of benefits, but there's a burden too. And Ty has done a phenomenal job with that team, made great adjustments throughout the playoffs when they've been in some holes. So we have great respect for their coaching staff, and I'm really thrilled that he's back and looking healthy.
Monty, last question before Steph comes in.
You've gone four games without Andre now, and you've kind of patched it with Loon and JB and a little bit of Nick Young. What are you and your staff what have you seen from those guys that you've used instead of Andre over the course of these last four games? And just, you know, what's your view of their evolution as a group?
Well, they're all doing well individually, but they're not. None of them play at all like Andre, so we've had to adapt our style a little bit. I think one of the reasons we were a little scattered in the end of that Houston series was we didn't have Andre playing that familiar point forward role, getting us settled, getting us into our offense. So we've just had to adapt and adjust and play through other people. And the guys you mentioned have all played their roles really well. You know, Jordan, I thought, played exceptionally well in that Houston series, making some plays, setting some good screens, creating some offense. And Nick had a really good series, guarded well and made some big shots. I thought his shot in the third quarter of the Houston game was one of the key shots of the game. It really got us going.
Here's some of what Stephen Curry had to say after today's practice.
First question on the right side.
Steph, Reed Forgrave with CBS. How does this team's – how do you keep your confidence from spilling into arrogance, especially when, you know, from us in the media, it's almost like this narrative of certainty around you guys?
I don't know. We try to come into every day understanding, like, nothing, none of this is guaranteed for us. There's a lot of talk and appreciation for how hard it is to win a championship and all that goes into it throughout the journey, throughout the regular season, the playoff chase. So for us, this year's been interesting with ups and downs and injuries, and even in the playoffs as of late, you know, having how we started games, coming out of the gate slow and fighting our way back in the second half. All that stuff is just a part of continue to grow and find, you know, ways to motivate yourself, but stay appreciative of the moment, because I think that you saw that on all our faces after game 7 of the Houston series, where, you know, this means a lot to us, and there's an appreciation for the difficulty to get back to this stage, let alone, you know, try to win 4 more games and win a championship. So we're living in the moment.
Second row on your right.
Anthony Slater with The Athletic. Steph, the lack of a finals MVP, has that ever gnawed at you, even in the summertime? And how much of a storyline do you expect that to potentially be as the series goes on?
Well, it took to the second question of my first media availability, so I'm pretty sure that narrative's going to take life as it has since 2015. But it doesn't make or break my career or whatever you want to say looking back. If we win this championship and I don't win in finals MVP, I'm going to be smiling just as wide, you know, and just as big. But I'm going to play aggressively, confidently, you know, with that right energy and motivation to help my team win. And usually when I'm in that mindset, you know, good things happen. Whether that means it's a finals MVP or not, who cares? But I'm going to be playing like it for sure.
Is the storyline more the people around you talking to you about it than maybe you yourself?
Not even people close to me. It's just that's kind of the nature of the beast, being on the stage 4 times in a row. You always got to look for what you don't have. There's always that thing about society. It's always looking at what can you attain, you know, more and more and more. And that's fine. That's part of the beast. It's part of my motivation to try to get back to the stage because I want more championships. But I've never really highlighted the individual type, you know, even before my regular season MVPs, I never really attacked it as if that was the goal per se. Like I said, my values around how I play, good things usually happen for me and my team if I'm in that type of mindset.
Over here on the
you obviously had Melissa Rolland of the Bay Area News Group. Steph, you obviously had that really interesting quote the other night about how the team could have splintered in that specific moment. Have there been other times throughout the playoffs or this season where you felt that?
Not really. Not in that heated of a moment, and that you know, was kind of do or die with our season on the line. But It was a special moment for us, and I think one that we'll look back if we get the job done over these next, you know, 2 weeks, where, again, as an appreciation of all that goes into winning a championship and doing it by committee and making sure every guy, you know, whether you're playing well or not, whether things are going your way or not, that we all bring something to the fold that have gotten us to 4 straight finals. And we've done it by appreciating everybody that's a part of that group. And I think that timeout, that 2.5 minutes, was a special moment for us and should give us some great momentum going into the series.
You talked about what wasn't said in terms of, obviously, there was no finger pointing. But what exactly was said? Did somebody step up and say something that really, like, made a difference for you guys in that moment?
It's kind of everybody just getting the anxiety off their chest. I don't remember, I can't transcribe everybody's comments, but I think at the end of the day, all I said was, you know, we got it off our chest, let's move on, let's win a basketball game, and let's do it together. Sounds very Disney Channel type movies, but that's that's what we needed to kind of just, you know, turn the page and focus on the game and how we were going to win.
Steph, Janie McCauley from Associated Press. How do you describe the spectacular third quarters and what it has taken for you guys to do that? And also, are you encouraged that maybe you guys haven't put together the perfect game yet and you still have a chance to do some of that?
I honestly have no idea what it is about the third quarters besides just sticking with the process, understanding that, you know, basketball is made of 48 minutes, and at any point it could break open for us. You don't want to dig yourselves holes in the first half, first quarter, like we've done the last two games. But, you know, we've stuck with it, and we haven't got defeated. And that's a good sign for us that if we can, you know. And a part of that, too, is Houston was a great team in that sense. And, like, there's not discrediting what they were able to do to impact the game early. And it just took us a while to kind of get settled and get in. It wasn't all just us kind of just messing around. But for us, to your point, if we can, you know, come out of the gate strong with the right intentions and execution and get off to a good start and then sustain that effort as well over 48 minutes, then, you know, we could have, you know, one of those moments in time where everything's clicking, and hopefully that happens, you know, starting tomorrow.
Joe, second row.
Joe Varden, Cleveland.com. Steph, as you know, Kyrie's gone. And then on top of that, the Cavs you guys saw at Christmas and then in January, half of those guys were traded too. So how do you look at this team now? You're seeing them for the fourth time. And is there anyone outside of LeBron that you fear?
That we fear?
Yeah. That you worry about?
I mean, yeah, it's a weird kind of dynamic thinking about. This is the fourth time in a row we've played, you know, Cleveland in the finals. Obviously, LeBron's still there, and he's the Mr. Everything for them. And has been playing amazing over, you know, the whole regular season, and especially in these playoffs to kind of, like I've said, will his team back here. We've been watching a little bit of film this morning, trying to figure out how the other guys have kind of fit in around him and where, you know, some of their tendencies are. And you look at Game 7, how when they play Boston, you know, the way that Jeff Green played, the way that George Hill kind of managed the game when he had the ball in his hands, his defensive presence as well, you know, rejuvenated, you know, Tristan Thompson. So. Let's see if Kevin Love is healthy or not. So there's guys all around that can you know, do things and make plays and are threats. But obviously everything starts with LeBron and trying to put up as much resistance as you can. And, you know, when he's on the floor, he's the factor that you got to worry about and try to take the other guys out too.
Mark, last question here in the front.
Steph, two for you. Mark Schwartz, ESPN. To follow up on Joe's question, you know, Saturday Night Live did a skit on how there's nobody on the Cavaliers except for LeBron James, and they were kind of making fun of the other players' contributions. I know the other day you kind of weighed in on that. What is it about that storyline and narrative that really rubs you the wrong way?
I mean, I think, you know, we know how great LeBron is and what he's been able to do statistically, impacting the game, the stuff that maybe it's hard to say this, but stuff that doesn't show up in a stat sheet, even though most of the time it does, the stuff that the confidence he gives the other guys, I guess, when he's out there on the floor. But, you know, defensively, energy-wise, you know, those other guys, whatever you want to call it, they're important to the piece. And they're a new bunch that are, you know, still probably getting familiar with each other. Obviously, they've been together since February. Learning on the go, and you can't for us, our goal is just to not to give them any confidence as we go forward in this series and try to use our experience and our chemistry to our advantage as we go forward, because they are talented guys. When they have the ball in their hands, they can make plays, and you got to be ready for everybody.
And secondly, in this series, there's two guys, one on each team, that you hear a lot about when they talk about intellect and basketball IQ. LeBron is certainly one. You've faced him many times. Can you give some examples of things that he's done on the court that just blow your mind from that perspective? And on your team, the same about Draymond.
Yeah, they're just basketball junkies that know the history of the game. We were joking with Draymond knows every draft class from like 1987 to now and all the different draft orders and whatnot. But you know, when they're out there, they just make smart plays. I can't really document them how they go, but they're always just you know, saying the right things, you know, making winning plays, changing the game when they're out there. So they use the mental aspect of it to give themselves an advantage and an edge. And I'm glad we got Draymond on our side, obviously, and LeBron is who he is.
Kevin Durant stepped up to the podium after the practice and had this to say.
It's been, you know, exciting that we got that opportunity to go through that and also get out of it and be in the finals again. But we're not satisfied. Definitely want to keep – glad we're playing still, but, you know, we want to – We want to finish the job, so we want to stay locked in and figure out just the best way to execute and, you know, win starting tomorrow. So, you know, it's kind of once you get that, put the hat on, and then you move on and get on the flight knowing you're not going back to Houston or playing them again, you know, after that first day, it sets in that you're in the finals. So we're excited.
Kevin, Ann Killian with the San Francisco Chronicle. After Game 7, Steph said there was a moment in the second quarter where he felt like things could have splintered with the team. There was a turnover. Harden had a dunk. He had a timeout, and he felt like there could have been some serious finger-pointing. We've seen that before with other teams. What was that moment like? Did you feel that, and what got you guys through that?
We just talked it out, you know, and we didn't take it personal when guys had stuff to say. We moved past it pretty quickly and knew that what we had to do to get back into the game. Usually when stuff like that happens and you know, you're in a tough situation and you're trying to figure your way out of it, you can go the other way and just put the blame on someone else, and then that just divides your team right there. So we came out that huddle as one. You know, we might have walked into it separately, but we came out as one. And I think that was a huge moment for us as a group going forward, not just that night, but as a group going forward, so we can look back on and realize that we can pretty much get through anything if we talk it out and communicate and realize that, you know, the goal is just to win. So that's what happened in that game.
Kevin Alsarasovic of Chronicle. Is it good for the NBA to have the same two teams in the finals every year?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's great. You want me to elaborate?
That would be great if you could, especially if you're one of the two teams, right?
Yeah. But you just get a great set of players on the court. I mean, it may not be as suspenseful as a lot of people may want it to be or as drama-filled, but that's what you got movies and music for. You know, I think this is a great display of basketball on the court from both sides, and if you're a real lover of the game, you can enjoy how both teams play it, even though it may be different. It's still organic and true to the game and pure to the game. So if you enjoy basketball, I don't feel like you should have any complaints because it's a great, great set of players on both teams.
Greg, back right.
Greg Logan from Newsday. In that vein, do you think about the chance for the Warriors to make history, you know, with 3 in 4 years possibly, as a way to be motivation against a team that most people feel is overmatched against you guys? And secondly, how does Cleveland change without Kyrie Irving here to help LeBron?
What was your first question again?
Will history help you overcome any sense of this being an anticlimactic series after most people thought the Western Finals or the real championship series?
I mean, I just know you got to play once the ball is tipped up, and you got to execute, and you got to go with your X's and O's, and you got to run your plays right, and you got to work out before practice to make sure you feel good in the games as individual players. That's the stuff I know about. The other stuff, I mean, it's kind of hard for me to talk about. But I know everything that involves basketball, what goes into the game, I know that that's important and that you have to do it every day if you want to win. And if you don't want to get to this point, then you can half-ass through the year and, you know, not care as much. But I think every player that's in his finals right now, they care about basketball. And that's the most important part, I think. And Second question, I'm sorry.
How different is this team without Kyrie and having rebooted in the middle of the season?
Yeah, definitely a different identity, different team from, well, not identity, but just a different personnel from last year. I just think they still play a grind-out physical basketball game. Obviously, it's centered around LeBron's talents and what he can do out there. But I think they got a lot of good complementary pieces around LeBron's game, but also guys that can go off, and like Clarkson and George Hill, that can kind of go off and do their own thing as well, Jeff Green. So they got a well-rounded team with a lot of athletic young guys, and it's different, obviously, without Kai in the mix as a all-world elite specimen that he is. But it does present a different challenge for us that we got to be focused in on.
Dave, on this side.
Kevin, Dave McMenamin, ESPN. Last finals, we talked a lot to you about how you used to work out with LeBron back in the day and, you know, played him in the finals when you were with the Thunder. But now, what does his presence in the league mean to you in terms of just checking the box score or seeing what he's doing at this stage? And then also, do you think, looking back at that shot you hit in Game 3 with him closing out on you last year, your career is kind of like pre-Game 3 and post-Game 3? Was that...
No. No.
What about the first question?
First question, yeah, definitely. You check the scores for all the best players in the league, and you want to see what they're doing and how they're contributing. And, you know, it's an inspiration to see different guys in the league, you know, whether it's guys coming up and, you know, showing who they are for the first time, or guys that's been in the league for so long who continue to bring that consistency every year. Bron's one of those guys that in order for you to be great like that, you got to do it day after day after day. And a lot of people don't have that mental capacity to even think about being that great every day. You know what I'm saying? So that's inspiration right there. And that's just a, you know, motivation to be the best that you can be as well. So, yeah, obviously you look at the best players all throughout the whole season, especially in the playoffs. And now I had a pretty solid career before I hit that shot. I felt.
No, it was good.
Last question here on the left side before Draymond.
Melissa Roland, Barrier News Group. Obviously, Kevin, Game 7 was kind of a tale of two halves for you. Was learning to have a short memory something that you picked up recently? Was that something you had to learn over the course of your career? How did you learn to develop that skill, and what sort of goes into that for you personally?
Well, this is my 11th year in the NBA. I know a lot of people have probably didn't watch me play before I got to the Warriors, but I was in the league before I got here, and I learned a lot along that time. I actually won an MVP award. And I went to the Olympics, scored a couple points. So I gained some experience over that time, if you don't know. And I learned a lot about myself as a player over that time and what works for me. And I think having a short memory is good, obviously, but also reflecting back and seeing what you can pull from situations as well to make you better in the future. You know, and it's a balance that you have to have where you don't want to always look in the past or the present. I mean, the past or the future and stay in the present, but you want to kind of, you know, see what you can take from your past to make your future better, if that makes sense. So I just try to have a balance of the two, and always be a student and learn about the game every single day and take it from there.
Warriors-Cavs Game 1, a 6 p.m. Pacific tip-off here at Oracle Arena. I'm Lawrence Scott, and this is Warrior Sound.